Wait, wait, stop. That's the one. Welcome to Zenten Speaks, a show where I make new friends and reconnect with old ones. A show where everyone's stories may inspire you to tell your own story. In this podcast, we encourage everyone to get rid of shame, guilt, fear, doubt, and judgments for themselves and for others, and replace those with love, empathy, compassion, understanding, kindness, and to do your best in everything that you do. In essence, to get rid of things that no longer serve your well-being. To be true to yourself and be honest with others. No need to be politically correct. That's out the window with 2020. Here, we tell the raw, uncensored story, your story. And tell the truth as you see it. Make sure you live your fulfilled life without permission or apologies. So, if you have a juicy, interesting, raw, unapologetic story, and inspiring, please make sure to contact me at zenten21@gmail.com. It is zenten21@gmail.com. Or you can find me on most social media platforms. You know it. The IG, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, OnlyFans. I mean, not really. But yes, OnlyFans. Just kidding. Not.
As you may guessed it, my name is Zen, and welcome to the show.
Today we have a guest. Our guest today is Cindy Cisneros. Cindy is a third generation Jehovah's Witness, meaning that she was born and raised as in the religion as a Jehovah's Witness, but she's no longer a Jehovah's Witness today. She's a former Jehovah's Witness, and her siblings and her father are also former Jehovah's Witnesses. They left the religion, but only her mother remained a Jehovah's Witness. Cindy told me that she had many stories to tell. So I'm very excited to hear the stories that she has to tell us today. And welcome to the show, Cindy. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for letting me come and join this podcast. I've been on many platforms, not on a podcast, but on Facebook about ex-witnesses and come together and talk about their experience. So I'm kind of excited to kind of talk about my upbringing in what we call the truth. And of course, this is my experience and my experience only, because everybody has their own experience. When I've talked to former witnesses, even my siblings had different experiences than I did. So thank you for allowing me to kind of give a little tidbit on me, because I swear what I can say could just fill a book.
Yeah, well, thank you. I appreciate your time as well. And as of this week, speaking to a lot of other ex-JWs, I've learned my golden boy experience was very different than everyone else's, which made me want to learn more. And even my siblings, I have a family of nine, including my parents. I'm sure they all have their own stories as well. And it would be nice if I could interview them. But as you know, you don't know my family experience, but as you know, as a whole in their experience, that with the shunning thing, none of us are talking to each other. It's so sad. Yeah, so this platform was created. So I'm an ex-witness, but I went through something last year, 2020, as we all did. And I realized how, are you okay with cussing? It's not a cussing show.
No, that's fine.
Okay. So I realized how bullshit the world is and everything. So I was just like, and I've been talking to a lot of my friends, and I said, you know what? I'm going to have a podcast because we're talking a lot together, and all this information, I'm sure someone would love to hear it. And when I've talked to other witnesses on the platforms, we have some juicy conversation. And I said, I'm done with bullshitting and lies to myself and ourselves and being shamed into things that we don't need to have. So I started the podcast this month, September. So it's been like 2 weeks now, but I'm doing recordings. And on October 1st, I'm going to publish kind of a thing. And yeah, so there's a long queue. But yeah, I was free tonight.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. And thank you so much for talking to me as well. Yeah, definitely. I appreciate your time. So please tell us a bit about who you are and what brings you joy in your life.
Who am I? I am a mother, and actually my daughter brings me lots of joy. I became a very young parent. Now, I wasn't a teenager, I was in my 20s. My daughter's actually 22. So she brings me lots of joy. And I'm very proud to say that I did not raise her as a witness. So she has a very different experience than I did. So I love celebrating her, celebrating birthdays. I don't celebrate my birthday, but I celebrate hers. I took her trick-or-treating. I did all the things that I never got to do. I let her join. I forced her actually to join Girl Scouts, cheerleading, you name it. I made her join all the clubs that I was never allowed to join. She went to prom. She went to homecoming. She did all the things that I used to like wish I could go to. So that having living through, I don't want to say I lived through my daughter, but I get to see the joy on her face, experience all the things that I never got to do.
Wow. That's, I never had a child. And this is so beautiful to hear from you, how the experience, you grew up differently and then you make sure all the stuff that you didn't experience or the stuff that you did experience that were not good for you, that you make sure she's not experiencing. Wow, that's amazing. So curiosity, how come you don't celebrate your own birthday?
It's kind of like my own mental thing. I still feel, I even though I'm not a witness anymore, I still feel very guilty in celebrating my birthday. Cause in our head it's green, like, oh, you're worshiping yourself. And listening to old JW talk, they talk about how technically the only time they ever talk about birthdays was John the Baptist and Pharaoh. So, you know, I kind of feel guilty because number one, I don't know how to celebrate. I don't even know if I'm celebrating correctly. And I don't even know if I'm doing my daughter's correctly, but I'm just like winging it. And to me, I gotten so used to it. It's just another day.
Yeah, same here. Well, this is a no BS show. It's very interesting. I think I never done them. Well, not never, but I really did the math. I think I'm 38, but I tell people I'm 40 because I feel like it's close to 40. I was born in 1983, and only last year, only last year that I started to actually tell people those things, because I said, okay, no more bullshitting, no more whatever. So I'm just going to say it. And one of the reasons that, okay, so starting reasons I didn't celebrate birthdays, because as you say, we're so used to it. We didn't need to. I had no need to do it. And I had a partner when I turned 25, he wanted to celebrate. So I let him. And that was the only time I let someone celebrate me. And I actually did celebrate as well. But years later on, I didn't really care for it because I feel that age is just a number. And people of the world or in our society, they put so much emphasis on age that I never done that before. If you have a, let's say if you're 25 or let's say if you're 30, you need to be married, you need to have children, or why are you still working at McDonald's? Why aren't you having this career and that career and why in this and that? So I feel like age limit people's mentality of getting to know who you are. So that's one of the reasons that I didn't care to know my age, and I didn't care to even know. I don't know anyone else's age, even my siblings, because I don't care to know, and I don't want to limit that knowledge of limiting myself knowing who they are, if that makes any sense. Or it also works in dating as well. People will say, you're 40. Oh, I don't want to date you. You're 5 years older, things like that. So it's been hard to, I don't really want to say hard, challenging maybe. I don't care much anymore. It's been challenging living in the world because of most people would ask, what's your age? And sometimes I would not tell them. Sometimes I'll make a story to basically not talk about it. And then that cost me a lot of relationships. And I've been okay with that because I feel like if that's costing me the relationship, then that means you don't really want to get to know me. You want to know my age. So that's been a big thing in my life, I've noticed. And it's my own roadblock as well, because I could just tell people and get on with it, but I've been refusing to. So I was very curious when you say you don't celebrate yours, and I don't either. So I was like, oh, I wonder if it was the same reason.
And it's kind of funny because there was even a couple years ago, about 5 years ago, I actually thought I was older than what I was because I went to the doctor and she asked me how old I was. And I told her, and she's like, you're not that old. And I'm like, I'm like, you're getting out the calculator. Like, well, I think I'm that old. and I swore up and down. And I was like, oh my gosh, I thought I was this old. And she was like, no, you're a year younger. And I'm like, oh, okay. I'll take your word on it. So I didn't. Yeah. That was the 1 year that I thought I was older, and I was like, oh yeah, okay. So it's kind of a funny thing that, you know, I was the one that always worked on my birthday, worked on Christmas, worked on all the I'm still almost a to-go person. Like, oh, I'll work those days, you know, because I'm like, psh, you know, I'll take the overtime, no big deal. Like, but you know, it's, to me, it's just another day just because I was so used to not celebrating. And that's why, to me, it's okay to celebrate my daughter's birthday, because at the end of the day, she did not grow up in that mentality. She did not grow up into what I grew up into. So I'm trying to stop the recycle of how my mom, you know, how my mom was, when she was, you know, when she became a, you know, my grandma came a witness, my mom came a witness in her teenager year. Technically I am third generation. So I want to break that cycle of like, it's actually okay to celebrate holidays.
Right. And I want to, at least for me, and maybe I'm asking for you, I want to make sure I tell people now on record, because people thought I either was hiding something or it was a secret, or I was ashamed of it. And it was none of those things.
It was none of that. It's just another day, because at my work currently right now, they send like every month, I'll send like a birthday list, like, oh, happy birthday. This is who birthdays. And I've asked to be removed from it. And they're like, why do you want to be removed? I said, number one, my birthday is my business. Number two, like, I still feel guilty. I was like, oh, Cindy, happy birthday. Like, I still feel guilty. So I even got to the point, like, don't put my name on that birthday list.
Interesting. Yeah, when it comes to gifting and the list, I wouldn't tell them because of the age limit thing. So it's very interesting, as you mentioned in the beginning, how we all have different experiences and how we respond to those experiences when we left. That's very interesting. So what made you leave the religion?
Well, to be honest, I actually left the religion more than once. I left my first time, I was actually 16 and I ran away. I ran away from home. I live in the Southwest, and I actually ran away to Texas. I mean, sorry, California. Wow. I ran away to California as far as, yeah, I live currently in New Mexico. I ran away. My mom was a very abusive mom, very mentally and physically abusive to not only myself, but my siblings. And it came to, I think what made first time runaway is kind of a funny story. you know, as witnesses, we're not allowed to have friends or outside of the religion. We're not allowed to date outside the religion. I had a crush on a boy in school. I was not allowed to date him, but my mother went to go beyond to like set me up with somebody that was 32 years old who happened. It didn't matter. He was 32 years old. He was a witness. It was okay. It wasn't okay for me to date someone appropriate age, but it was okay for me to date somebody that was mentally and physically older than me. And I didn't, you know, to me, I lived in a bubble. And right. To me, I felt like, you know, they kind of, depending on, you know, maybe they were trying to, I don't know, in my head, it was like, oh, you know, they're like, oh, he's going to be an elder one day. You should be an elder's wife or whatever. And I'm like, I don't want to be an elder's wife. I don't want, yeah. So I ran away. I ran away to California. And actually, my parents tracked me down and made me come back and made me go to the meetings. And they said, as long as you're under 18, you have to go. You have to go to these meetings. I fought tooth and nail. I ran away again when I was 17. And this time I actually ran away to Alabama the other way around. And I was actually living in a homeless shelter at that time. And sadly, you know, when you other, this is weird, it's kind of sick because I felt like, okay, I got free of the cult. Unfortunately, I joined another cult without knowing it out there. And these people, they know how to prey on people. They know how to read you. And it took me a long time to actually leave that cult as well. By the time I came back home, again, I was living in a homeless shelter. And my parents, you know, before I came back, they had tracked me down, but I was already 18. There was nothing they could do. They're like, nope. You can't make her come home. She's 18. Trying to escape from my second cult. I came home. You know, I very much missed my siblings. I very much missed, you know, even though we didn't really have a connection, I still missed some of my family members, like my cousins and stuff like that. They weren't witnesses, but I, you know, would talk to them once in a while. I came home and I knocked on the door and asked if I could come in. And my mom said, you're not welcome. You're dead. She slammed the door, said I wasn't welcome back. So I went back and lived in another homeless shelter by, I don't want to say by Jehovah's grace of God or whatever. It's just that my dad actually took pity on me. He was not what we call a real witness. He wasn't baptized. He did go to the meetings. He didn't go a lot. And we were, it was kind of like damned if we do, damned if we don't, because we couldn't have friends. Like I said, we couldn't have friends outside of Jehovah's Witnesses. And then yet Jehovah's Witnesses looked down on us because my dad technically wasn't a brother. He wasn't an elder. He wasn't baptized as a witness. He just went when he could. So we couldn't, it was like, oh, you're real, your dad's not a witness. So,
right.
Yeah.
How they judge you and separate you. Within the congregation.
Again, yeah, within the congregation. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, they're in the congregation that I went to, the majority are Caucasian. There's not a whole lot of Hispanics like myself. Now there's more, there is more now. We had one African American couple that joined with their kids. A couple Native Americans, but it was majority Caucasian. Now I probably look Caucasian, but I used to get teased a lot from my family. They're like, oh, you can pass, but that's another story. But my dad took pity on me and came in, and he found that I was actually at that time, he came tracked me down. And at that time by the time he tracked me down, it had been a couple of years past that, you know, past the time turning 18, he tracked me down. I was 21. He tracked me down. I was still living in the homeless shelter. Sometimes I would rent like a hotel for, you know, one of those little hotels for the week. And just, you know, I didn't have an education. I dropped out of high school you know, we were kind of forced to drop, you know, they always told us like Armageddon's around the corner. You don't need higher education unless you're going to, oh, you're going to be, because, you know, we don't need doctors. We don't need lawyers. But if you're going to do construction or plumbing, oh yeah, that's okay. Because then we can rebuild after
right.
Armageddon.
Or it can be a pioneer if you're a woman and just quit school.
You can go wash windows. You can go be, you can go clean houses. And that's not what I wanted to do. Right. But it was always a mentality like, oh, you don't need higher education. My dad tracked me down. I was probably 21 at the time. And I actually was pregnant with my daughter. And I think he heard from the grapevine through some other relatives. I don't know how my dad tracked me down. And unfortunately, I can't ask him. He did pass away recently. And we miss him, and I'm so glad I'm able, I hate to kind of train go off in the story, but I'm very glad that we connected after that. He came and saw me and he said, me and your mom finally split up and it's for good. Please come home. My house, your my house is open for you. I'll help you get off your feet. Come home. And I came home and we never left. Actually, I ended up living with my dad for the next 20 years. And he helped me raise my daughter. Now, anytime I could have moved out at that time, I could have moved out. I even tried to move out. And my dad said, I don't have anybody. Nobody's talking to me. You're the only one who's talking to me. Don't leave me. And I never did. I'm very grateful that, yeah, well, ended up living together for 20 years. Yeah, his last, in June when he passed away, his last 6 months, me and my daughter took care of him. He had colon cancer. He was doing hospice from home. He was diagnosed 3 years ago, and I took him to all his appointments, everything. And I'm very glad I got to know my dad as an adult. And I'm very glad that my daughter had a father figure.
Well, my condolences, first of all. And it's interesting how things played out, how you lost one parent and then you gain another one, and it's, and you live with him for that long. Because most, well, I don't know if it's a Midwest thing, but to my knowledge, most children, they leave their homes at 18 and they don't even see their parents, or sometimes they see them around holidays only. But you live with him for 20 years and you had a bond with him, so that's very beautiful and great, and I'm glad that did happen.
And in the Mexican culture, so I am half Mexican, in the Mexican culture, it is up to the woman to not only provide for your husband, but you are supposed to help your parents as well. Okay. You know, so that is, it's a very cultural thing.
Okay. I love it. When I moved to New York after some breakups, maybe 2 years in, I lived in Queens, New York, in Woodside. And I lived with, that's a Filipino area. And I lived in a home where there were 3 bedrooms and I had rented a bedroom by myself. And there were 4 women in 1 bedroom. And they were often teasing me. And they said, crazy Americans don't always want to live by themselves. And they said, independent. and then they were right. They lived with families. They lived together in a room. I don't think I could do it. But they all lived together and they saved so much money. Their rent was probably $200 and I was paying $900.
And I didn't share a room with my dad. I mean, I had my own room. My daughter had her own room, you know, because my dad.
Right. I mean, but you were like still in a home, like family wise, connected. And well, that's another story. I think my culture is American, but I'm not sure. I think I'm torn in between. So I was born in IET. So my culture is Haitian, but being Jehovah's Witness, we did not celebrate culture.
So we just were Americans. And then when I was in the house, when we were Haitian, but we didn't celebrate any culture. So I guess I do call myself American, and that's all I see myself as, because I don't know anything about Haiti or even Haitian culture, et cetera, et cetera. I know some things, but not a whole lot. So I don't know if Haitians, when they marry or when they get together, if they stay in one home or not. So I wouldn't know. But from what I've seen in American culture, as soon as you turn 16 or 18, you want to live on your own and actually have a place. I've lived here in Brooklyn for 8 years, and I rent to a lot of people. And a lot of people are, as soon as they turn 18 and 19, they want to move out. And I've had a lot of 19-year-old, 20-year-old living here. And I've often wondered, why aren't you with your parents? But they probably either want freedom, or their parents breathe down their necks, whatever. So I admire when families stay and live together, because I don't know what is that like, because I left my parents' house when I was 19 and a half because it was impossible to live there, even as a Jehovah's Witness, because I was really into it and it was still impossible. But that's another story. I wanted to ask, so when you were 16, did you want to move back to were your parents together then?
Yes.
Okay. And so when did they got a divorce, and why, do you know? Or if you
never, they never divorced, because under Jehovah's eyes, because they didn't commit any of the, they were separated and the brothers wouldn't allow them to divorce. Now, they could divorce in the court, of course, but under Jehovah's eyes, they would always be married, because my dad never cheated on my mom never cheated on my dad didn't smoke cigarettes, my mom didn't smoke cigarettes. You know, they couldn't, the brothers would not let them get divorced.
Right.
Now, technically, my dad could have at any time, you know, could have did it, but he never did. So up until the day that he died, he was married to my mother.
Another curiosity, so why do you think he didn't join fully? And is your mom is your mom a devout worshiper, and your dad, I guess, wasn't? Like, why was the difference in that?
Well, my dad, you know, he was raised Catholic. My mom actually met him in California, and she was a migrant worker. So my mom is was born in Mexico, and she told me how they joined the witnesses, that my grandma, somebody came to the door, and it must somebody died, and I don't know who died in my grandma's life. It could have been her mother, her sister, her best friend, and someone came to the door preaching the word. It's like, you know, live forever, oh my goodness. And so that's how they kind of got involved. I think my mom married my dad, and the brothers told her, the elders told her, do not marry this man, he is not a witness, you're going to have problems. And it was funny because the elders actually even married them. And now that's a no-no. But back then, you know, this in the 60s.
Oh, okay. Maybe they were hoping.
But they weren't.
Right.
So my mother, I think she always hoped that she would convert my father fully, but he never really did. I think, excuse me. I think one of the things that, when my dad got called for the draft, he went. You know, I think my mom was very hostile, like, oh my goodness, you're going to go serve your country, you're supposed to be a witness. But, you know, he still went. So I think it's because he never really fully, he never got baptized. He went to meetings, but he never fully converted.
Oh, I see. My parents, I heard, and I think it's true, from my sister, my parents got separated as soon as I left the home. I made sure I left the one in the weekend where I was supposed to go preaching. So I went preaching, then came back with a van with someone who helped me move. And my dad was home for some reason, and my mom was at my sister's congregation, because I made sure she left before I moved, because I knew it would be impossible if I moved, because she would make a big deal out of it. And it seems like it's a common story that a lot of parents, either parents is, are violent and abusive toward their children. My mother was actually the violent one. And my dad only hit me one time in my life. And which is very interesting. He hit me only one time in my life. And he was my best friend. I don't know if he knew it or not, but he was my best friend. And I've always wished I had a close relationship with him. But I think because men cannot have relationships, that stupid idea, then we never really had a bond. But for me, it's something I always longed to have with him. And yeah, so they got separated. Maybe like, I don't know exactly, maybe 2003 or something. But I didn't laugh, but I was like, so how, even if it wasn't a divorce, so if you are a true witness, you would make it work because they were both devout witnesses. So if you're both devout and you believe in something, you would make it work if it actually was a real religion or even if you took your practices seriously. So one of the reasons I left, as I got older, besides my parents being my mom mostly abusive and my dad was verbally, but never physical until one time. I saw a lot of hypocrisy and how, especially my mother, she was very worldly in my eye. And as I got older, I got baptized maybe 16 or 17 and the elders were starting to give me privileges and I was doing a lot of things in congregation and they wouldn't give anything to my dad. He was just a regular person. And then they would give me a lot of privileges. And when I got home, I got bit by my mother and verbally abused by both of them because I got privileges. So I was very confused. I'm like, how are you jealous? And you want me to do this and I'm doing this and you showing jealousy. It was very weird. So that's one of the reasons I left. So what are you the oldest in your family or?
I'm the middle child.
Middle. So the oldest one stayed when you ran away?
My brother actually had already left. My brother's a lot older than me. He's about 7 years. He hadn't left the congregation. He had just already moved out of the house with his, he had got married. so at that time, my brother was probably 23, maybe 24.
So he was not a witness. He didn't.
Baptize. He was. None of us got baptized ever.
Okay. So do you think your family was more like, in a sense, took from your dad of things of believing or from your mom?
My mom.
I'm sorry?
My mother.
No, I mean, oh, so you guys were believers.
Yes. For, okay. We were believers and we tried to be good witnesses for many years until we kind of like woke up, I guess.
Right. And I don't think it helps when one of the parents or both parents are abusive because it just confuses a child. It confused me because it's violence. And the Bible talks about love.
Yeah. My dad never abused us. It was only my mother. My dad worked a lot. You know, he worked 6 days a week for many years because, you know, my mom wanted to pioneer. Mm. So my dad worked a lot in order to put a roof over our head so my mother didn't have to work. So my dad, he wasn't a bad dad. I'm not saying he was a good dad either. He wasn't around there a lot. There was a lot of time I was mad at him that he didn't protect us from my mother's abusiveness. But I forgave my dad a long time ago. But I even forgave my mom. Now I don't. I say this, you know, I love my mom, but I don't like her. if that makes sense.
100%. Same here. Yeah. Yeah. I've never been a parent, and I will not know what it's like to be a parent until I experience it. So I will not say my parents were bad parents, but I will say they were bad people, definitely. Because I have the experience of being a person. Yeah, they were bad people, as in their violence and the hypocrisy and the do what I tell you to do and not I do. And it just confuses someone growing up. And they did a lot of, well, not big illegal stuff, but they did some illegal stuff. And I'm thinking, hey, where's the honesty? Where is the being a Jehovah's Witness? Are you being real or are you not? And if funny thing is, when I was getting privileges, I told on them. And they got really mad at me. And they, when I got home, I got abused for months because of it. But then at some point I told them, that's what you teach me. You teach Jehovah's Witnesses to tell on each other. And that's exactly what I'm doing. Anything I do that you teach me to do, I do it and you punish me for it. So do you actually believe? Ugh, I don't know. So yeah, I'm glad I totally left all that shenanigans. So what was your relationship with your siblings like when you were at home and when you left? Do you get in touch with them after you ran away, or when you, because it doesn't seem like you got on your feet for after a long time. What was the relationship?
I can kind of tell you what our relationship is now, because before, it's even though we lived in the same house, we didn't really know each other. And it's kind of weird to say that, because we all in the, you know, my brother had different privileges than we, because the youngest is my sister. So there's, you know, one boy, two girls. So we had different expectations as women than as my brother did. My brother had more expectations because he was a man. but we didn't really know each other as siblings, because it was seems like we were all like, you did this, you know, we're all going to tell on each other. It right. wasn't until we've all left, and a lot of us didn't even know that each other left, because we stopped talking to each other. You're shunned, you treat them like they're dead. And right. it wasn't until many years later, till we became adults. My sister, it's probably the last one to leave, and maybe my dad. And my sister left because she had, you know, two of her kids were kind of, they grew up in it a little bit up until probably third or fourth grade. And then she stopped, said, no more. I don't, and it's weird because we went many years without talking. So right now I'm trying to really build a bridge with my siblings. It's very hard because we don't even know how to communicate with each other. My boyfriend's so funny because he always tells me, he's like, I just don't understand your guys' relationship. He's like, you either like, either siblings either love each other or they hate each other. And they're, you guys are like in the middle. And I said, well, I don't know how to relate to them. I don't know how to relate to my sister. I don't know how to relate to my brother. I don't even know how to talk to them. I'm trying to make a conscious effort because, number one, you know, I, you know, with my dad passing, I took it very hard. Me and my daughter took it very hard because he lived with me. And my siblings took it very different because they did not really know my dad like I knew my dad. So I'm making a conversation effort to at least talk to them at least once every 2 weeks, which was something I never really did before. I would maybe talk to them once every 6 months. Are you alive? Okay, good. Bye. You know, have you talked to mom? No. Okay. So so I'm trying to make a conscious effort to like, because I really don't even know my own siblings and I'm trying to get to know them.
I totally understand. And we have, I have the same relationship with my siblings, unfortunately. And I think that's a symptom of being Jehovah's Witness and breaking away from the religion. Because when we were in the same home, we didn't know each other either because we were focused. I don't think we were even know who we were. Did you know who you were?
Even no. Everything was around the religion. Even when we went on vacation, it was like, oh wait, we gotta find a close congregation.
Right.
Because we cannot miss a meeting. We went to exactly. Disneyland when I was like 13. And my parents were like, nope. We can't book it or nothing. We got to find a congregation close by so that we can still go to the meetings while we're out there, because there's no excuse for missing the meetings. I feel so bad for the witnesses now, because before, like, you know, if you were sick, you didn't, if you're truly sick, you couldn't go to the meetings. Now they're on Zoom. There is no excuse. You better be there.
If you are sick, you are supposed to call in and be on the meeting still. Because I remember I couldn't be sick. I had to phone in, and then they had the phone, old phones, rotary phones back then. Yeah.
I do remember that, but I just now, like, there were some times where there would be bad connections or whatever. You would hear so much, background noise. Now on Zoom, you hear it. You can mute yourself and then you could just hear what the talk. So
right, so much has changed. Yeah, it's very sad how there's a lot of disconnection with siblings. And as you say, I made a effort to reach out to my siblings. So another thing I need to be clear on, so my family has 7 children, including my parents, who are 9. I've always thought we were 8 for some reason. And some people might think, a lot of people who don't know Jehovah's Witness or they don't understand what's going on, they might be like, how you not know who your siblings are, or how you think there is just 8? I have no idea. Because first of all, I didn't know who I was. Second, we didn't celebrate birthdays. And third, they're always kicking people out. If you didn't do something, they kick you out. And if you want to come back in, you under their roof, you have to go to the meetings and you have to comply and all this stuff. So I don't know who's who. And it's interesting to hear how you had similar situation, how you didn't know your siblings and how you're trying to reconnect with them now, and how it's very hard for my siblings to be connected, because the very older brother, which I did not meet until I was 10 or 11, and he was very abusive towards me. Even after I left, he was making a lot of lies about me. And even things like that were true, he was making them a big deal or things like that. Gossiping. And my 2 older sisters, I think they're still in and they're married and they're baptized. And so going down, I'm the youngest of 7. And one of my brothers, I don't think he's Jehovah's Witness. I think he likes to go in whenever there's a sickness with him or in the family. One thing I don't understand, my personality is, if I'm going to do something, I just do it. I don't flip-flop. So 2 of my older brothers, but they're the youngest, they're flip-flopping. When there's a death or something happens or a sickness, they go back and forth. I don't get it. And I have a sister, she still believes, because sometimes when I make a Jehovah jokes, she gets really angry at me, but then she's not doing anything religious. So I'm very confused with that. Maybe I'm the only one who, not that I don't believe, I just don't care. I'm living the best life of my life. So I just don't care, because none of the being religious of Jehovah's Witness, I don't carry that in my life at all. So how was the relationship with your parents together, because of the father not being fully in and your mother fully in? What was the dynamic between each other and the dynamic that trickled down into the children?
I really don't know, because my dad wasn't here a lot. But the dynamic was, I think my mom, my dad just let my mom make the decisions for us, you know, whether it was what, you know, where we lived, what we wore, or, you know, Bible study, you know.
That's interesting. I think,
yeah, that my dad just allowed it. And I don't know if it had to do with anything, you know, because he just said, well, you know, I think maybe my dad thought, well, maybe this is the truth and maybe I'll, you know, let this, you know, do this. But, you know, in order to support my wife, I have to work. So, mm-hmm. I mean, my dad, he was looked down on because he didn't go as often, but he was like, well, you know, in order for me, for my wife to pioneer, I have to work. I have to work 6 days a week, right. You know, after kids. So the dynamic was my mom kind of just ruled the house. And my dad was there when he was there, but he was rarely ever there.
The same thing happened in my house too. I was having this conversation with another XJW, how my mother actually, yeah, she ruled the house and anything she said goes. And I had a conversation with my sister, and my sister was saying how my dad was devastated and had all his children, well, not all of them, but most of them, the ones who got kicked out and left, he was very sad about that. But he couldn't say anything because he was afraid. And I never spoke to him directly since. Actually, one time I asked my sister for his number. So I called him because I wanted to interview them. So I called him and I left a voicemail. And then he called me and left a voicemail. And I got busy and then I lost interest to talk to him. So for nearly 20 years, or probably 20 years, or nearly 20 years, I haven't seen him or spoken to him. However, my mother often calls me and texts me. And every time I block her afterwards, not because I block her, not because of animosity or we had a fight. I block her because I need to have a boundary, and I have a boundary that she refuses to go along with, and she continually wants to break. So basically she has no respect for my boundary. She reaches is, if I was the one reaching out as a respectful person, I would go along with her beliefs, because clearly I'm looking something from her and to go back to the religion, because she is. But she often reaches out to me at least twice a year or more. And then she wants me to come back for her own purposes. And I still think she's worldly, because sometimes I peek into her Facebook and I see worldly stuff. As in, and it's not me, I guess, like, I'm not judging her as living outside the religion, but in a sense of looking into the religion, it's like a judgment of, you're not supposed to do those things. So then why are you in the religion if you're not following the rules, period? So I just don't understand that at all. Like, who are you trying to please, Jehovah or man, basically? And this is why when I was in the religion, I was really into it, because I was pleasing Jehovah. So that's why I did all what was asked of me, and I got punished for them, which makes a lot of sense, because they were pleasing men instead. So how was growing up as a witness in school?
Horrible. It was horrible because you're so segregated from everybody, you know. You're like, I still remember, like, being in elementary school, you know, we weren't allowed to salute the flag. I remember a teacher calling me out and calling me a Nazi because I wouldn't salute the flag. And I knew I couldn't salute the flag because I would get in trouble. And then I ended up getting sent to the office because I wouldn't salute. And then I get in the office, they want me to call my parents, and my mom was mad. She was like, why are you going to the office? And I told her, and she was like, well, didn't you tell her you're a witness? I'm like, of course I told her as a witness. I told her it wasn't allowed. Right. And like, it was like, damn if I do, damn if I don't. So it was like awful. And oh, I remember I used to hate it when, you know, you would see the corner, I used to see somebody walking with cupcakes, or like, damn it, somebody's birthday, they're gonna take me to the library. I hated that because it was like, and there was not that many witnesses. So they would, you know, they would take you to the library, and then the kids were like, what did you do wrong? Why couldn't you participate? That you couldn't have a birthday cake. And then of course they would try to save you one. Like, we'll just give it to you tomorrow. Oh no, I can't do that because right. It was still for a birthday. And even if you, I felt like if you were looking at it and another witness saw you looking at it, they would go snitch on you. And I mean, I used to hate the elders' kids, hate them with the passion, because they would snitch on you for anything. Any little thing. And they were the worst kids, but they were like, oh, my mom was like, no, why can't you be like, you know, Brother Johansson's kids? And I'm like, I am not so-and-so. And they're the worst ones. Oh no, not Amanda, not them. No, no, no. And I'm like, okay. So I hated being a witness. I mean, I didn't get to do the little box for Valentine's Day. And then even if someone still, you know, they would still send a list out, they would still get Valentine's, I'd have to give them back. Like, oh no, it's okay, you can sneak one. I'm like, nope. So I was just so secluded. I didn't have any friends. And a lot of people thought like, oh, you think you're too good. And I'm like, right. No, I'm not allowed to be friends. Like, I'm not allowed to be friends with you.
Yeah, I have the same thing. They would say, you think you're all that, or they'll call me arrogant. And I'm like, you don't understand what's going on for me. I totally feel you.
You just think you're too good to be our friend. I'm like, I'm not allowed to be your friend. Like, if I was seen talking to someone for more, like, especially if it was a boy, for like more than like a minute, it was like, oh my God, you're flirting, blah, blah, blah. Let's go tell the elder kids, would run, go tell, you know, my mom. And I'm like, literally, he just asked me like, hey, do you have the notes from chemistry? You know?
Right. So. It's very interesting how a lot, well, maybe if you're Mormon or Amish, a lot of people, who, different religions, they don't, in my experience, they don't understand. It's just like, they'll ask you out of curiosity when you start talking. It's so crazy. They're like, okay, I don't understand, so let's move on. Because that kind of life was very different and interesting. So how was...
Especially coming back from winter break. What did you get for Christmas? I didn't get anything. Were you bad? No, it wasn't bad. We don't celebrate. Oh, it sucks for you. Like, right. Oh, my bad.
Yeah, they don't get it.